This is RSBNB Update, episode 566, recorded Thursday, May 12th, 2016. Bias Pet Overrides. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Just Dave and myself here this week.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for tuning in yet another week.
You sound kind of different, and let the listeners know that, you know, you're not changing your voice or anything. It's just that,
no.
just that time of year.
Yeah, it is that time of year. Allergies, head cold. I've actually been outside. I know it's crazy going outdoors. You know, IRL is definitely a real thing. I've been outside with work. We've got a lot of stuff going on. We've got a lot of projects we're wrapping up. So I've literally been outside probably all day. Well, actually, all the week. So pretty much, obviously susceptible to all the allergens and stuff. So I'm definitely at the peak of a head cold right now and allergies. So please forgive my my odd tone of voice, but I'm gonna power through.
For yeah, you guys. This past Monday, I had a massive sneezing and runny nose fit. It was to the point I think I sneezed 5 times in 1 minute.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and there's 2 seconds in between, and then, I mean,
it just keep going.
Yeah, it just kept coming. But anyway, so this week we got a small, I guess, maybe, I don't know, would you call this update inconsequential, perhaps? I don't know. Maybe not if you do God Wars Dungeon 2, but the people...
Definitely
who,
nothing substantial by any means to what we're used to, I guess we should say.
And, I mean, I was looking back at the... Just to take us off on a bit of a quick tangent here. I was looking back at the updates we've had for 2016 so far. And aside from quests, God Wars Dungeon 2, everything has been relatively mute. Of course, Invention and NXT are also in there. So sure. that seems to be something comes with the new release cycle. But... Anyway, so this is, of course, one of the smaller updates of May, and that includes boss pet overrides for summoning familiars. You have any boss pets?
I do. I think I have one technical boss pet. It's the General Audor, which is, of course, the boss pet for the Bandos God Wars boss. I got it 168 kills in, and quite a few of my friends were very mad at me because, you know, it took them about, you know, 2,000 kills or something to get there in camping, and I just kind of, like, accidentally got it while I was training Invention there. So, yeah, that's the only one I have, but I don't know if I'll be using that as an override or not, so.
Well, all hope is not lost for those of you guys who do not have boss pets and have not devoted countless hours to fighting various bosses. Yeah, I mean, I've heard cases of multiple thousands of Queen Black Dragon kills needed to get the Queen Black Dragon pet. So it is a steep climb to get these. But for those of you guys who do not have boss pets, prior to recording, I was able to confirm at least 3 pets that you can get for free that you are able to use as overrides for summoning familiars. There are some pets that can't be overrided, like, for example, the tiny Lucian from the quest, which is kind of unfortunate, the mini White Knights and Black Knights from last year's Falador rework. Those can't be used, but what can be used, 3 of them that I found that most people should have and can get relatively easily are the Mega Duck pets from when the whole boss pet set came out. If you got the Mega Duck, you can now have a series of ducks following you, overriding your Pack Yak or Grack or whatever you choose. So there's one right there. You can also use Elvis Presley, which everyone who did last year's Christmas event probably has. And the most recent one that I found that works is the Chronicle pet from the Chronicle promotion. So if you have the Chronicle book, you can use that as an override as well. So there is definite options for those of us who do not have the kills invested in the boss pets. Now, in order to access this boss pet interface, all you do is you go into the customization interface and choose Override Familiar. And then anytime you summon a familiar, that will be displayed rather than the traditional Pack Yak, Grack, or, you know, Giant Ent or whatever familiar you might be using. So there are some options right there for you if you do not have them. Do you think this will encourage people to go boss slaying to do the Grim Reaper challenges or anything like that?
I can't say that it's going to make people want to go and pet hunt. I think people that pet hunt are going to continue to do it, and it's just sort of a nice little thing for the people that are already into it. But I don't think it's going to bring in a whole new demographic to search for these pets, since it's a pretty steep undertaking, honestly. And I don't think just being able to override a pack yak is going to make people want to camp bosses for, you know, 2K plus kills. But it's definitely cool. It's definitely nice. And especially for those people that really have invested, like you said, you know, have the Virago pets, which are, you know, some of the hardest to get in the game, Queen Black Dragon. Because, you know, after, you know, getting those sorts of things, those pets, it's kind of like you want to show it off. But, you know, most of the time, these people that are bossing have familiars out. You know, they don't have just nothing out where they can show off their pet. They have, you know, their pack yak, or they have their Nihils or stuff like that. So being able to override, I think this is a long overdue update, and I think it's really nice, and it's going to encourage those people that maybe did get discouraged while boss pet hunting to keep going. But like I said, I don't think it's going to really sort of boost that whole activity as a whole. So
yeah, and just some of the chances here, courtesy of RS Wiki: Araxor 1 out of 500, Kriara 5,000 along with the rest of the first God Wars dungeon ones. Nex 1 out of 2,000, Giant Mole 1 out of 2,500, Hurricane 1 out of 200, King Black Dragon 1 out of 2,500, 1 out of 2,500 for the Queen Black Dragon again. So as you can see, they are relatively rare, and the law of probability states that yes, you can get it in this 1 out of 2,500. But you could very well be there up to 1 in 5,000, potentially. So, it is a definite steep climb. And there's another interesting thing about these overrides released this week, is that they do not override the legendary pets. Which, I mean, I don't have a legendary pet, and I never really felt like investing in one. Did you get one of those?
I might have the Blazehound. I didn't bother with the dragons or the drakes that came out, because I didn't really see a point. I have a friend that did, but I think I have a Blazehound. I think and it wasn't even when it came out really either. I just kind of spent a few mil on bonds and went ahead and got one, because I thought it was kind of neat, and it sort of matched my whole entourage at the time, and it was just kind of nice.
They could do so much rather than outside of the standard familiars. You know, you can bank an item with them, you can use them to store items like a beast of burden, fertilizer for farming, you can use it as some compost as well. So there's a definite use for legendary pets, and I mean, I can see why Jagex doesn't want to override the legendary pets, because you pay real money for those, and they want those to be shown off as kind of a premium model compared to what you might have in game.
Sort of free advertising for them.
And I mean, with that, we heard rumblings that boss bet overrides were going to come last summer, but they didn't. But of course, they came now, so I guess that's positive. And I mean, it's just a little thing, I guess, they can do for the combat types out there, which, I mean, there's no problem with.
Right.
So, I don't think there's anything else to mention about these aside from the fact that they're here and you can use them. I mean, it's not an update.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, yeah.
That's going to make anyone angry or anything, as I mentioned. Inconsequential here. But if you could go for a boss pet, which one would you go for?
I've always really liked the Order of Ascension little guys that kind of float around behind you. I've always sort of liked that environment and just the way everything looks, and I just like the little guys that, you know, kind of hover and follow you. So if I could go for one and really, really get one, just purely from looks, it would be one of the Legions, or however you say it. But, I mean, going from the strictly rarity, I would gladly accept a Virago pet for sure.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to use Luciana as an override, but I guess you can't use the bobbleheads like that, which is unfortunate. I don't know. I wonder why it's just boss pets and not other pets and followers as well. That wasn't ever made clear to me. And if there's an example out there of that, why that's the case, I'd like to know. But anyways, also new animations each of these boss pets have when they're being used as a familiar. So walking, running, that kind of thing as well. So, I mean, I guess there was a bit of an update to the animations then. So.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit more than just sort of plopping in a few lines of code and being able to tick a box. Uh-huh.
Because so. You got to remember the familiars need the attack animations.
Right.
They also need the walk animations. They need the run animation. So there's three new animations that need to be recreated right there. And when you consider it, pets that exist in game, kind of like the Luciens and whatnot, just float right there. So.
Right.
I should have got my Chronicle book to attack. I didn't attack anything with my aunt. That would be an interesting thing to
Might
see.
Look like something with the Lexicus Runewrite and Dungeoneering, all the books that are flying around.
Oh, God, that boss.
Oh, man.
Anyways, speaking further of bosses, a number of improvements this week to God Wars Dungeon 2. So, kill timers have been added to each of the bosses. A way to renew instance time while inside a God Wars 2 dungeon instance is available via the kill count interface, which is good because we have that in the previous God Wars dungeon.
Yep.
Drop tables for the mobs inside the dungeon have been added. Okay, that's good. Because, I mean, let's be honest here. Outside of the actual bosses when this update came out, the drops that you got from the minions were kind of blasé.
Yeah, they really were.
Improved click zones on bosses. That's good. Mm-hmm. On a faction insignia, you can now toggle the option to prevent dealing damage to matching faction NPCs. So I guess if you're in there for Zaros, you toggle the option, you won't inadvertently kill the Zaros minions with your AoE abilities, which is good.
That is nice, since they all kind of clump together and they're fighting for the points and whatnot.
You can now check the kill count. You can now check via the kill count interface which bounty you have currently been assigned by Fang the Bounty Master. You can now toggle on faction insignias the ability to automatically correct ingression fragments. The Aftershock Invention perk will now proc more frequently. A tooltip for current reputation points has been added to the kill count interface. A slimmer and taller version of the kill count interface is now available. And Bloom for the Twin Furies weapon gems has been added. So, which of these do you think jumps out the most?
Probably the drop table thing. And it's nice to have a little bit of a slimmer interface at the top because it is kind of just big. And, I mean, you can play around with it. But, I mean, all around, I think these are all pretty... they're significant, but they're really just quality of life. It's not really anything game-breaking. It's just nice to kind of... I really think this is sort of a post-release little polish, and I think it was well done. Nothing necessarily jumps out and says, oh my God, this needed to happen, but everything that was listed is like, okay, well, I'm glad they did that. You know, that's cool, you know, so...
Yeah, and when you think about it back in the olden days, this is the kind of update you would have had to wait months for after mm-hmm. having a piece of content released. So it's nice to see that after the initial release, there is a period in which the content can just be updated and made better. Interesting part about the Aftershock perk, that one would definitely be on my list because the Aftershock perk is the one that deals extra damage in area of effect. Mm-hmm. So...
Okay, yeah, that is rather substantial because, you know, if they're all bunching up and you're trying to AoE stuff down, you can get your kill count real high.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you need it real quick with that, okay.
Because when you think about it, Aftershock is something that has been kind of neglected. And before this update, I'm not sure what it was tweaked to now because I don't have the perk, but previously you would need to deal 50,000 damage in order before it would activate.
Oh my
gosh. Yeah. Then if you get that at rank 3, it's 120% base damage of your weapon. So when you think about it, 120% of your base weapon after doing a certain amount of damage, I think that's a pretty good perk to put on your weapon if you're doing AoE combat. So Absolutely. Once again, we're seeing the use of invention in terms of tailoring your weapons playstyles directly to what you prefer doing.
So. Which is a step in the right direction for sure, especially with the, substantial update coming probably in the next week or so.
I'd say perhaps next week, if not the week after, we'll see the invention tech trees, and it'd be interesting to see what happens with that. So, anyways, that is the RS update for this week. Nice and simple for those of us who go down to the God Wars Dungeon 2 or utilize boss pet overrides. But definitely do check out the overrides for some of the pets that you have. I mean, you might think that, oh, I don't have any boss pets. Well, chances are that you do have something that can be used. So just go into the customization interface and see if you can check the little checkbox that says override familiars. All right. So moving on to the patch notes for this week. Got a number of things here. For start, Ashdale is no longer visible in NXT from the Void Knight Outpost or the South Shore of Felda Pills. Which is good, because with the increased draw distances in NXT, this is something that they said was going to be a work in progress, making it feel as though you're actually far away from these places.
Yeah, it's nice to see each week they're, you know, still polishing the NXT stuff rather than just sort of holding out for, you know, like you said, hold out for 4 or 5 months and just click everything and do it all at once. It's kind of nice, you know, to see them actively keeping an eye on it and, you know, polishing, instancing, doing what they need to do as each week goes on. And, you know, it's slowly getting there, but it's nice to see that that's definitely on their plate. So.
All right. Also, remove some lines of voiceover referring to green clothes from the Death Lotus Assassins during the minigame, a simple favor in the player-owned ports. Did you ever notice this?
I did not. I do have my sounds on, but I don't have my my voiceovers on all the time, and I haven't done ports in quite a while, let alone any of the random events. So I can't say that I noticed this. Did you?
Yeah. Basically, when you would get the Death Lotus Assassin minigame in ports, the text would say something else, and the voiceover would say something completely different. And the voiceover would say green, when in reality the text said red. So, I mean, okay, I'm glad I just wasn't hearing things or seeing things wrong. So it's definitely good that this has been fixed, because this has been a long-standing issue in ports. And I automatically, you know, just assumed I was reading something wrong. I didn't know this was an actual bug. Otherwise, I would have reported it way back when.
Yeah.
So, all right. The daily limit on the amount of rune spears that players can participate in has been removed. However, the rune dust cap is still in effect, so obviously this is for the rune span.
Right.
How do you feel about this?
Can honestly say I've never done any of the rune sphere stuff. I've maybe found the wizard a few times, but all the times I've been in the rune span, I just sit on that one island and just, you know, siphon on that small thing right there. I really don't bother with going around to find all the little D&Ds.
All right, well, that's good then. I think that this is definitely a positive update then, and will perhaps encourage more players to go check this out.
Yeah.
Ultra growth potions now work on the tree patch in Herblore Habitat, which, I mean, it's kind of odd because you don't think of Herblore Habitat as a standard farming patch, but it actually is, can be used to plant all the normal trees, and you can do it as a day-to-day part of your farming run.
Yep.
Boss pet objects are no longer destroyed on death. Instead, they can be reclaimed from death with a reclaim cost of 8,000 coins each. So if you die while you got that QBD pet in your interface, you're safe.
Wow. I feel like there's probably some definite rage before this happened.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure it's happened more than once. It's just a shame that the fact that they kind of make boss pets relevant now, that they have to implement that.
Yeah,
but it's nice to see those in there, because we all like saving things on death. So,
the kill count multiplier is now cleared when leaving the heart. That's good. I mean, it would definitely be nice to keep a kill count multiplier as you go through it, but I also wondered why that this was staying when I would leave the heart. So I guess this is the kind of bug that is an unintended side effect that improves players' performance down there, so they might not necessarily report it.
Yeah.
Improve the following Saren spells and prayers. Fortitude now grants plus 15% defense up from 10%, and they also added a 3% damage reduction, 10 life points plus 10 life points per constitution level, and plus 10% accuracy when using defensive abilities.
Seems like a pretty hefty buff.
Yeah, it is. Good, though. And, I mean, I am still trying to find someone out there who uses Fortitude. I mean, I am not involved in raids or any other combat like that, but I'm not entirely sure if, you know, Fortitude would be something you'd use at raids, because, I mean, it still just seems that the goal of combat in this game is to just do DPS, DPS, and more DPS to kill the targets faster.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a pretty niche audience there. I mean, because first of all, you have to, you know, get into some, or, you know, talk to somebody that's really into PVM, and then at that point, out of every group that does it, there's usually maybe one or two tanks that would even use that sort of thing. Yeah. So yeah, it's very particular.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're level 99 constitution, this is only giving you an extra 1,000 life points.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I would have increased that a bit. And 10% accuracy, though, when using defensive abilities is interesting, because it puts, you know, okay, maybe we should use some of these defensive abilities and puts that at the forefront. So I'm happy about that. But still, 15% defense is nice. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm going to try and find a place where this can be useful. Intercept duration has been increased from 5 seconds to 10 seconds. Intercept is the prayer that allows you to take damage for someone else, which, I mean, makes sense, because you don't know when the damage is going to come, and you might want to activate it a little bit beforehand. And when you think about it, with the in-game tick system of 0.6 seconds, 5 seconds is not that much time to get ready for an attack.
No, so, it's really, especially on the tick system, it's not much at all.
Yeah, so 10 seconds is definitely good to give that nice cushion. Regarding prisms, recasting prism spells will restore half of the equivalent prism duration within range. So obviously, if you just want to keep the prism up, you can just recast the spell for half the amount of time now, which is good. Single target ancient spells will now only activate on the main target if used with AoE abilities. Oh, that's unfortunate.
But, it is.
I mean, it makes sense, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has to happen.
It basically turned any ice spell into an ice barrage, practically. Also in that same vein, multi-target ancient spells will now only consume runes for one cast if activated when using AoE abilities. Okay, so the question I have is, how many runes were these using beforehand?
I'm almost afraid to find out.
Because, you know, thinking about it, when I did Nomad's Elegy and I had ice spells going, I did eat up the runes fairly quickly. So maybe this was using a rune for each time the spell hit a target, which, I mean, would be cringeworthy at the amount of blood runes and whatnot that would cost.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that was put in here as a fix. Switching from a members to a free-to-play world will now change the player's standard, or will now change players to the standard prayer book, and when switching back to the members world, previous settings will be restored. Which makes sense, because you're not exactly going to be able to use the ancient spell book, or rather the ancient prayer book, sorry, in a free-to-play world, so your prayers are going to be useless there.
Right, yeah. I never even thought of that, but I haven't really gone to free-to-play.
Yeah, neither have I. Updated several combat ability tooltips to better reflect the effects of the abilities. Okay, that's good.
That's good,
I'm not sure which they are, but I mean, as it stands right now, all the abilities seem kind of the same, so I'm glad they did this.
Yeah.
Smoke Tendrils no longer requires the target to stay still. Smoke Tendrils is the magic ability that we got from Fate of the Gods. And the invention Pogo Stick is now a level 1 weapon.
What was it before?
I think it was 40 or 50, if I recall.
Okay.
But I can see why. I mean, they would do this, because you can definitely kill stuff easily still, low-level things at least, with a tier 50 weapon. Yeah. You have a pogo stick, right?
I do.
Yeah. I haven't been there yet, but one day. Free players can now smith their own throwing knives and offhand knives. Yay, another ability to use ranged on free-to-play, which, I mean, when you think about it, members got crossbows, but free-to-play, we're just stuck with the two-handed bows, so I'm definitely glad that you can use these knives now and make your own knives.
Yeah, that is nice, especially for the free-to-play to get a little love, too.
I think that previously they would have had up to, I think black knives was the highest, though I'm not sure if that goes all the way up to rune nowadays. Let me just check on that quickly. This used to be a very popular method to train ranged in, you know, 2007 and 08 and whatnot, so be interesting to see if you could take this all the way up to Adamant, and then that would be a great way of training and maybe even doing it in an Iron Man kind of style.
Yep.
Let's see, the Adamant Knife, tier 40 ranged throwing weapon available to both free players and members. So yes, you can use it, or you can make your own now on free-to-play. Nice. Nice. I wish we had these options when I was free-to-play back in 2004.
Oh, yeah. That would have been real nice.
I mean, saying that, I kind of date myself, but...
I'm right there with you, yeah.
It was hard training ranged on free-to-play because you didn't have magic bows, you didn't have knives, and you were just stuck with, you know, a slow combat mechanic, so... Definitely making things nice and even now. And finally, made changes to the shipyard view and player-owned ports to improve frame rates and improve camera movements when jumping to ships or between ships. So it kind of appears as though it's a modern NXT kind of interface now, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, ever since ports came out, the whole interface there felt extremely clunky. So it's nice to see them sort of polish that up as well. So
yeah, I completely agree with that. All right. Anything else from the patch notes for you?
Nope. I think that pretty much covers all the ground.
Okay. Well, now we're going to talk about some Rune Labs kind of things. But first I'll just give an update on the Prestige Mode, support that we've been gathering so far this past week. We're up to 53 supports so far for Prestige Mode, which I am so happy about. I was only anticipating that we'd get to 50, and I thought it was going to be hard to get to 50, but 50 was pretty easy. So, you know, just a big thank you out there to the entire community for supporting this idea. As of right now, our target looks to be around 63 or 65, because that'll get us on the first page if we got there today, so we're about 10 off. And, I mean, we're on the top of page 2 practically, so that's is a good thing for us. Lots of good discussion going on about Prestige Mode, what it should contain, what it shouldn't contain, maybe some different ways of implementing it. And overall, I just want to say that I'm so happy that we got this discussion rolling and that people are talking about Prestige Mode again. And I mean, yeah, there have been some people who just flat out said no, but I tell them thank you for the bump on the discussion topic, because there are people who want this, and if you don't want this, I mean, there is a reason that there is no downvote button on the Rune Labs posting.
Yeah.
So, very happy for the support. So, yeah, see? Yeah. Yes, I do realize what you're saying, but I do disagree with you, because if I didn't put this out here, then it would mean that I didn't agree with it. So I do not agree with you. I'm sorry. I'm just having a little conversation here with someone who gave me a free bump on the forum topic. But anyways, that's that. So I definitely encourage everyone, if you haven't yet, have a look at Prestige Mode. Give it a look and give it a nice support on Rune Labs. And we did also get it talked about on RS Weekly with MageBit. He had a suggestion to it, and I mean, while that's not necessarily an outright support, as I said, it gets the discussion open, and we are grateful for that.
Indeed.
So, just a reminder, you can access that at bit.ly/RSPrestige2016, all one word. So, I'm going to let you go first. We're going to go over a couple of our Rune Labs ideas that we're supporting in addition to Prestige Mode. So what do you got?
Actually, I have some technical difficulties with my mouse right now. Give me 1 second. Hold on.
All right. That's perfectly okay. Then I'll just talk about one of the simple ones that I can throw my support behind then, and that is Elemental Workshop Part 5. It currently has 75 or 73 supports on it, and there's no real explanation of what would be going on with the quest. It just says more puzzles with an exclamation mark and a big smiley face. So I have thrown my support behind Elemental Workshop Part 5. I've always enjoyed the, you know, closed nature of that quest series and the fact that it's almost a purely puzzle-based experience. So 73 supports with Elemental Workshop Part 5. I would recommend also giving your support to that one, too.
Everybody loves Elemental Workshop, let's be honest.
You really do?
I think they're cool. I guess it was the most recent one with the huge puzzle at the bottom or whatever that gosh, I don't even remember what it was. Chaos, maybe? I don't know. But yeah, the Elemental Workshops have always been a good series because it really is pretty much the epitome of the puzzle mechanic in RuneScape quests. So it's you know, there's not too much story necessarily, but it's definitely chock full of puzzles. So all you puzzle guys out there, it's definitely check it out if you haven't done it yet.
Yeah, and I mean, the puzzles are kind of difficult, and I mean, yeah, okay, but it is the quest line devoted to puzzles, just as, you know, the elf quest was devoted to a bit of combat and maybe some puzzles along the way, and then you have other quests that are combat intensive entirely, so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to have a quest that is related purely to puzzles. So
yeah,
I'm good with Elemental Workshop Part 5 in that regard.
Alrighty, are we reading sort of what's on the Rune Lab thing?
Well,
sort of,
I mean, if it's long, you can give it a brief overview or just use your discretion.
Okay, so one of the ones I chose is the artisanal and gathering skill revamps. You check it out in the show notes, but basically what it is it's pretty much saying that gathering and artisan skills need a little bit of treatment like Herblore got with extremes. Basically, to have very high level in the skill progression, like probably 80, 85 plus, have stuff that's untradeable. So, for example, you know, with fishing and cooking, maybe have some high level untradeable meals or food that you can cook. So say maybe you could, you know, catch fish at level 90 plus or 95 plus that, you know, healed maybe 2700 instead of like the 2300 that a rocktail heals, but it's not tradable. So it encourages players, you know, if you want that extra stuff, to go and, you know, do the skill yourself. Same with, you know, Herblore and extremes. You know, you can buy the lower level stuff, but you have to be the one to make the higher level stuff. And that's really, you know, as soon as extremes came out for Herblore, that really boosted the market for Herblore because everyone wanted to and still does. Oh, well, I need to get to a certain level so I can get, you know, extreme anti-fire, and I need to get to a certain level so I can get overloads, da 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 da. And I think that's really cool, and it really sort of promotes some of that old content to where it's just, oh, I need food, let me go throw an offer on the GE for 500 rocktails, and boom, I'm done. As to where with Herblore, you still, you know, you have to make that stuff. No matter what level you are, you know, the highest levels in the game, Lamy, Scuzzy, they all have to make their own potions. So I think this is really cool, you know, with logs, with, I wouldn't really necessarily say fletching. I guess you could do that with ammo. You could fletch untradeable ammo. That's really good. With mining, he mentions something about having maybe like condensed coal or something to where it would count as maybe two or three, you know, multiple things of coal when you're smithing stuff yourself. But I think one of the most beneficial and, you know, sort of encompassing the entire concept of this suggestion is the food thing, because going along with Herblore, it is a combat consumable. It's something that's always going to be in demand, and to sort of add that little extra buff, but having to be self-sufficient with it, I think is really cool. And I think that's something, you know, it's very minimal, but it's substantial as well. And I think it would be pretty cool to see come to the skilling scene at least. So
yeah, I definitely agree with that. My only concern is how this would fit in with the potential mining and smithing update that's coming later this year, specifically relating to how condensed coal, for example, would fit into that. And I don't know, maybe this is right. already something that's underway, but I definitely see the merits of it for cooking, you know, slayer, bossing, wood cutting and whatnot. So, all right. Yeah, that's a good one. I can get behind that. My next one that I am supporting this month is the player-owned farm plus Farmer's Guild plus Farming Quest. And, you know, it wouldn't be a Rune Labs submission session if I didn't find something here that had farming. And I was really surprised to see that this had upwards of 330-plus votes on this.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, this is going to be the extension from player-owned houses to player-owned ports and now player-owned farms. And as Salix, who submitted this idea, writes, Yes, that's right. You'll be able to manage your own farm with livestock, including cows, pigs, and chickens. It wouldn't be farming if the place didn't have any new patches. And not only will it be your farm, it will be the farming guild with Rusty as its guild master. Who's Rusty? Rusty is the son of Martin the Master Gardener. Who you will meet during a new quest all about farming, a farmer's roots. During this quest, you and Rusty are tasked by Martin to find a suitable location for the Farmer's Guild. On your search for a suitable location, you and Rusty will meet with NPCs from other farming quests like Horatio and Back to My Roots, My Arm from My Arm's Big Adventure, Queen Elamaria from Garden of Tranquility, Brother Ulthric from Perils of Ice Mountain, Silas from Grim Tales, and of course the Patch Farmers and their tool partners. The tool leprechauns will finally get names. Examples, Sean, Patrick, and other Irish-based names. Like Back to My Roots, it should contain a lot of puns and it could require completion of Fairy Tale Part 3 and the quest mentioned earlier. The Gnome quest series could possibly involve as a requirement due to Spirit Trees. Location suggestion, Faladar Farm, or Lumbridge Farm, or Ardoyan Farm. So, well, the details on the actual farming guild are kind of sparse. I think we could leave that to Jagex to develop, should this make it past the initial Rune Labs suggestion phase. I have some ideas of my own on the farming guild that I wrote up last November that I need to dig up, but it would definitely be an interesting thing to see what Jagex would do with a farming guild. And I definitely second the need for new patches and new crops, because that's something that we haven't really had much with the farming skill. The farming skill is pretty much as it is when it first came out, with the exception of, you know, the elder trees and whatnot, and maybe a few herbs along the way. So definitely liking the fact that this currently has 335 supports on it. So that's my second one.
Yeah, I have to say that this is incredibly thought out. And honestly, reading this, it really did sound like it was a, you know, release notes that, you know, just with the names that he thought out and, you know, just sort of how he planned all this out. And it really sounded like a genuine update. So I really do think this has potential. And kudos to him or her. For putting that sort of creativity and thought into it, because there's so many ideas on Rune Labs that are on the front page, and you click them and there's like four sentences and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, we should do this. It's like, okay, we'll put a little bit more thought into it, you know, grab my attention. But I think they,
yeah, and I mean, they really nailed it. You can have simple ones like, you know, Elemental Workshop Part 5, because we know what Elemental Workshop Parts 1 through 4 have been, so you might as well have Part 5 being something relatively simple, right? So, yep. But anyways, just a bit of information on the Farming Guild idea that I came up with, which was a part of another project with someone. Basically, the Farming Guild was going to be north of Ardoin, just kind of like he mentioned, actually, so we're kind of on the same idea there. Our guild master was going to be Martin, and you were going to be able to earn XP in Martin's advanced allotment flower and herb patches. They were going to give increased experience on the order 20-30% and take a shorter time to grow, like the other similar farming patches. And you'll utilize the sprinkler system to ensure your crops have a lower chance of being diseased. Of course, sprinklers are coming later this year with invention. And some rewards from it will be seeds like carrot seeds, lettuce seeds, purple cabbage seeds, and pomegranate fruit trees, and redwood pine tree seeds. So those were some of the ideas of rewards from our farming guild. Just in case anyone out there is listening and needs an idea of some of the patches or crops that the new farming guild can offer.
Indeed.
All right, and what's your final one?
My final one is it's titled 2017 Revive Older Content. Basically what it is it is it's actually a friend of one of our fellow RSBNBers, Metal Maniac 9, if any of you have heard of him around. He is pretty much the original Iron Man. He does everything all self-sufficiently. Really awesome guy. But anyway, this is basically a suggestion for a skill called polymathy, which, for those of you that don't know, is the knowledge of many sciences, so a jack of all trades in essence. Basically, reading through it, it pretty much outlines what the daily challenge system is. Basically, it's sort of a skilling version of Slayer, I guess. So I could see this sort of being a skill, since they could make Slayer a skill. But I think this could go either way. You could make it a skill, or I think it would be nice to sort of evolve the daily challenges and bring it into a, maybe not a daily thing, but just how it could be a Slayer thing. So obviously, if it's not going to be daily, you could just go to Challenge Master Fiora and get a new challenge. And instead of calling it a challenge system, you know, it could be some sort of a mini game, or, you know, something along that line. But basically what it's trying to do is revive older content. So here it says, you know, you could get tasks, catch 50 Crimson Skill Chompas, or, you know, make 50 Extreme Melee Potions. Pretty much just trying to stimulate the community to skill in other fashions other than, like, you know, just the best XP. So, like, for fishing, instead of going to the waterfall in Prif, it would, you know, say, go catch 50 lava eels, or, you know, whatever. It's just sort of trying to get the old dead areas of the game sort of back into it. Again,
yeah,
I don't know if
you know
it
how much we need that.
Right. I don't know so much if it needs to be a skill of its own, but it definitely needs to be addressed. You know, it's definitely worth supporting and getting in on the discussion in the forums.
Yeah.
But I think this sort of mechanic does need to be added to the game. To sort of add a skilling version of Slayer, whether it be a skill or whether it be just an overhauled daily challenge system to where you can just go and get tasks, sort of like the God Emissaries as well, kind of mesh those together. But yeah, I think this is a really good idea and a good concept to sort of revive some dead areas for sure. I think they hit the nail on the head with the minigame spotlight, and I think they could really bring back some skilling and, you know, add some more integrity to the skilling scene by addressing this issue. So,
that's, yeah, and I mean, for anyone who says that it shouldn't be a skill, just look at Slayer.
Yeah,
Slayer came out in January 05, and as it was back then, people clustered around various NPCs to kill them, One of the most popular was Shadow Warriors in the Legends Guild, believe it or not, which is an area that's totally deserted today. And you wouldn't know that in 2005 and 2004 that this actually was an area that people visited regularly. You wouldn't know it. And the reason I'm saying this is because when Slayer was first released, it fixed a problem that the game had, and that was that people were clustering too much around these NPCs. Now, the problem today is different. It's not a question of capacity, but it's a question of whether or not certain areas of the game are being used. And I think that Prestige Mode could also go away to alleviating this problem. But also, I mean, why not make this a skill? It's exactly the same idea that Slayer... exactly the same thing that Slayer tried to fix. And right. Yes, we have it in the form of daily challenges and whatnot, but maybe you could have the daily challenges be more special and then just have these things work specifically on the skills. Like go, for example, catch X amount of fish, whereas you know you currently have right now, for example, in the daily challenges, go to the Runespan. Whereas in this skill, you would perhaps just say craft X amount of nature runes. So I can see why this would be a definite good thing to have. But
yeah, and I like the... sorry, go ahead.
There's one caveat. This month with the Tech Tree Update for Invention, I'm going to quote from the Made Behind the Scenes here. We're bringing some changes to the way that tech trees work. Providing new task-related gameplay within Invention, giving you more focus as you train the skill. Now, remember, as it is right now, Invention can hook into combat, fishing, and woodcutting. So there's three kind of skills right there that we can use with Invention. So I see this as kind of expanding it out beyond just those skills, giving you task-related gameplay, which I think is a good thing, and maybe this Invention Tech Tree update coming later this month could act as a kind of field test for this update. So, I just hope that the Invention Tech Tree update doesn't exactly cannibalize what this potential skill could be.
Right. And he also mentions, as we see with Slayer, obviously it wasn't unreleased, but later on, we had the Slayer points, but they're saying with this, you would get polymathy points or, sort of reward token system for completing these tasks, and then it could be redeemed for minigame tokens, Thaler extensions, the Dungeoneering Scrolls, new skilling tools, Brawler's Gloves, and other rewards such as a cape for having virtual 120 in all skills. So I definitely think there's a reward system to where they could have something like, because I sort of felt like Dungeoneering kind of tried to do that. It was pretty unrelated to what the skill was by itself. Mini game, but that's something. To offer sort of little helpful stuff with other skills. So a reward shop for kind of a combination of the Slayer reward shop and the Dungeoneering reward shop would be excellent for this sort of skill. And I think it would, other than the fact of just getting it up to 99 or 120 or what have you. And gaining XP, it's definitely, have something that you could, you would want to train this skill so you could use with other skills, sort of interlacing the skills.
Yeah,
so
and it's also interesting that he mentions that it would not be an elite skill.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because elite skills are only supposed to tie into 2 to 3 extra skills, and then they have that XP curve as well. So. Right. I can see why going to regular 120 with a non-elite skill makes sense for this. Yep. So, yeah, I like this. I'll give my support to this one and the other one you talked about. So, I mean, this is the kind of discussions that we need to be having as to how we can revitalize aspects of the game. And, that was also partially what I wanted to do with Prestige Mode, which I think we have accomplished. So, all in all, win-win. So... Excellent. All right, so we just got a couple other RS things to do before we move on to questions. So next up, we have the Treasure Hunter Protein Memories. So Treasure Hunter has now met Invention and Divination. Well, I mean, divination only. So, how do we feel about that?
The Protean memories, as with all Protean materials, are completely OP. These Protean memories are very OP in the sense that you pretty much just get them and you can be anywhere. They're all stackable and you just sit there and you get the XP as if you were dumping them in a rift. So it really is just face roll XP, but what can we expect anything less from Treasure Hunter for the past few months of what they've been releasing? So yes, it does follow the Protean material sort of archetype, I guess. But, you know, it's always kind of a shame to see a skill or XP method fall victim to Treasure Hunter, but it is what it is. So
yeah, and exactly. That's the best way we can come up with this. And, I mean, we had the question last week relating to, you know, spending on Smoldering Lapse. So I would hate to see another video like that that would look at what you can do with Protean memories. So with that being said, you can pick these up on Treasure Hunter this weekend, starting on May 12th, going through May 16th at 23:59 game time. So use your discretion. And we also got a weird announcement from Jagex that something is happening on May 28th called the Summer Summit, which is a live stream straight from Jagex HQ. And it's going to be over 5 hours long, and it's going to have exclusive reveals, including huge RuneScape keynote announcements such as new updates, exclusive new info on the Ark, which is Eastern Lands, Solo Boss, Gower Quest, and more. Also, announcements for Old School, Idle Adventures, and Chronicle. Plenty of Q&A sessions in between where you can put your questions to the development team live, and instructions on how to claim an exclusive in-game commemorative item for the Summer Summit. And they say, please note, this won't take anything away from RuneFest, which is still to come this year. So this will be happening on May 28th. We don't have exact times yet, but of course this will all be streamed by Twitch.
It seems like they're a little sort of stabbed to get in on the E3 festivities.
Oh, is that when E3 is?
No, I think it's like the first week or so in June, but I think they're kind of just... this is completely just my speculation, but it seems kind of interesting that they just decided to have this like sort of big fun reveal announcement party of what's going to come, you know, but aside from RuneFest, I think they're just trying to get in on all the kind of everybody's ready. The beginning of summer, everybody's getting to know what's coming out in the holidays and what's coming out in the rest. So I'm not complaining. I really like it because, you know, we always like to get the insight on what's going on and what's to come. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. So. E3 is June 14th through the 16th, so it is okay. In the summer gaming reveal session, so I mean, that makes sense. And they did tweet out a schedule, I believe, for this, so we will work on covering this. I don't know if we'll do a special show for it or if we'll do one on Saturday, but we will definitely have coverage of this. I'm thinking we'll just do the show on Saturday, because if I recall from the schedule, it's due to end at around 8 p.m. UK time. So that would work well for us doing a podcast that day. But of course, that's all tentative and whatnot. And heck, right. We could even make it a live stream version of it. So we'll have to see what happens with that. So, all right. So that's the Summer Summit, May 28th. And finally, this week, Chronicle is launching on Steam on May 26th. So that means that this weekend, if you play Chronicle Login, you'll get 3 free card packs. Yeah, I guess that's all there is to say about this. It's going to have full Steam achievements and Steam trading cards and a new ranking system. And process will be carried over from the current beta, and there will be no stat wipe. Which, I mean, makes sense carry over from an open beta.
Sure.
I really want to see it move to tablets in OS X. They did say that that is the next step for this, so I'm happy about that. You still play Chronicle?
Not as much as I did when I got the beta invite a few months ago. I've been entranced and doing stuff in the main game and other stuff, so I haven't really had time to really sit down with it
after it's been polished. And see, that's the same thing that I feel with it, and I think I would be more inclined to do it if there was the mobile version that was ready to go, because, I mean, that's just a lot simpler than working on, you know, the main screen of RS and then having Chronicle open on another screen. And plus, there's no OS X version, so that's kind of iffy for me as well.
Yeah. But.
Alrighty. So that's it for RS news this week, and we're going to move on to a couple of your questions right now. So the first one is a question from Wiley. So he says this is a head scratcher, so I'll read this out for us. Hello, Wiley here with a head scratcher this week. I was doing some math on bonds the other day after listening to your discussion about the pay-to-win YouTube video. All my figures from Grand Exchange prices are from May 8th. I rounded where it would simplify numbers without skewing them too much and are in US dollars. $25 prepaid bond cards would give players 4 tradable bonds if sold at the standard GE price, and this would give the player 10,714,541 coins. This puts a real-world cost of 1 million coins to 58 cents. This actually allows us to label in-game items with real-world values. For example, dual Ascension crossbows would come out to 73.84. Dual seismics, 220.28, and $1 will get you 19,265 cabbages. First off, do you think it's reasonable to assign these actual values to in-game items as a way of judging your character's monetary worth, or do you think that examining items in this way is something that should never be done in-game? Working off that, if a person is working a full-time job at $10 an hour, the normal starting wage here gets paid 1.5 ratio for overtime and pays a traditional 33% tax rate, that would bring home $10.05 an hour, or if turned into wealth in the manner above, 17,231,137 coins. Do you think that there should be a way within game of making money at a comparable speed to this, or is it best that buying bonds directly producing more wealth is the way to go, as it produces more revenue for Jagex as a company? Thank you for your show, and don't forget to feed the ancient cabbage from Meg's cases to your baby troll to always have a special little cabbage running around in your player-owned home. And just on the note about feeding it to the baby troll, I fed a watering can to my troll. So I have a watering can troll running around.
Oh, that's awesome. I really like this because I've done it multiple times in the past, and I don't want to say I've kept a running total, but every time that that bonds fluctuate highly, I like to do a little number crunch just for a fun little comparison. And last week, after we did mention that video on the smoldering lamps, you know, only costing $4,400, and I say only, you know, $4,400 to get a max account with one bill cash. Going right now, I would say as of about a month ago, last time I checked, party hats were going for about 5 bill, which is 2.5 max cash stacks or so, maybe a little bit less. That translates to about $4,000. So a party hat is almost, you know, if we're going to sort of compare it on, we're kind of going apples to oranges here, but a party hat is just about as, you know, worth a completely maxed account. So it's kind of interesting to sort of think about that. And, you know, a digital item, $4,000, that's kind of ridiculous. It's cool to think about.
It's a head scratcher for me.
It really is. And, you know, this isn't the first time that, you know, games have had this sort of conversion to real world money. As some of you may know, EVE Online, it's a very large space simulation MMO. There was actually a big borderline criminal scandal where a corporation, which is the equivalent of clans and RS, a giant corporation, this guy ran like the corporation bank or whatever, and the equivalent of a bond in RS is called Plex. It's a pilot license extension, and it can, you know, it'll give you a month of playtime, and you can spend real or you can spend in-game money to get it, but you can also purchase these from the developer, obviously, just like it came with bonds, for real-world money. So basically, what had happened was, to convert it all to RS, it's basically like saying, you know, Clan Citadel would have like a clan bank and everything was shared and everybody would put all their bonds in there and, you know, be able to take it out. And it was basically all run on trust. Well, this guy pretty much got all this stuff and then one day just kind of stole it all, logged out, changed characters, and disappeared and made a YouTube video that says, F you guys, I literally just stole about 80 grand worth of in-game, you know, items. So, screw you.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. And the numbers I don't have off the top of my head, but that's the basic premise of what happened. You know, it was this guy that just completely scammed like it might have been like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of in-game items. And it's gone down, I think, in like the top three biggest borderline legal scams on online gaming. But yeah, that's, I think that was sort of one of the big stories that sort of got the whole you know, conversion of in-game currency to real-world currency and just to sort of gauge that sort of thing. But yeah, I really like doing that, and it's really cool to see, you know, Dual Ascensions is like $75 and, you know, Dual Seismics is $220. And for the, you know, for the real big-time and long-time RS geeks out there, you always make those real-world connections. So it's like, oh, you know, if you're at your job, it's like, how much would I be making in RuneScape money? Or, you know, if you're doing farming runs or herb runs every day and, you know, you're pulling in 5 mil or, you know, however much you make, it's like, oh, well, that would be, you know, $50 a day. It's just kind of, it's just fun. But yeah, I like that. I don't think it should be, I don't think it should be never done in game, in games to compare the two. Like I said, when you do it, I think it should only be for fun. I don't think it should be to gauge any sort of gameplay or something like that. I think it's just a neat little trivia just to sort of compare. But I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But,
yeah, I definitely think just for fun as well. And, I mean, also, when you put it down to it, I mean, RuneScape is supposed to be a game. And I like the fact that, for the most part, you can keep it as its own little sandboxed environment. So I've never actually done that for items, so it's not something I would do, but I can definitely see the merit of doing it. And I think an interesting thing, and perhaps the most shocking time when you can do something like this, is when you look at it and you see how much gold is potentially coming into the game in, for example, an hour of high alking, and what that ultimately means to the RuneScape economy and whatnot. Because, like it or not, there is the conversion ratio between GP and real dollars. So this conversion ratio is essentially putting a value on the gold, which kind of links it to real life and says, okay, so you're clicking these buttons, here's how much gold you're bringing in, and what does this mean for the RS economy as a whole? And that's the way I do that kind of thing like that. So, yeah. Thank you, Wiley, though. Maybe I should do that. Let's see. So he said,
you know, it'd be kind of cool because if you have the wealth evaluator for your account, you could kind of see what it would be worth. I mean, with just judging strictly, and you know, I'm not condoning selling accounts or anything.
No.
Just strictly from knowing that a fully maxed account is worth $4,400 roughly at the time of this recording, it would be interesting to see the wealth of your account. And obviously, you wouldn't be able to sort of gauge what you've already spent on skills, but just to see what you have and how that compares to a max account just as a benchmark, I think would be kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, for example, the Black Santa hat right now, at the conversion value of 58 cents, is worth $850.
Wow.
And I have one of those.
Do you?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I got it at the event when they were first being released.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is GE price. I'm not sure what the street price of that is currently. But
all right.
Anyways, thank you, Wiley. Next one is from Colton. You want to read it, Dave?
Yeah. Hello to our lovely hosties. Earlier this week, Mage Bit of RS Weekly responded to Shane's Prestige Mode Rune Labs post by saying that he feels to true fault in Prestige is the lack of actual new content and incentive to prestige a skill. Do you feel his assertion that Prestige needed The Prestige needed this to be completed properly from its prototypical form. If so, how would you propose incentivizing players to Prestige outside of the high scores table? Also, sleeping with a fan on, yes or no?
All right. You know, I think Prestige Mode on its own needs to be about the high scores table and enabling a way to get higher rankings in a skill without necessarily going for seasonal high scores. So that's the way I initially intended Prestige coming in. But with that being said, I don't have a problem with there being incentives along the way to propose or to encourage players to prestige their skills. So with that being said, in terms of what kind of content I think you could see, I don't think that you would want something that would necessarily require a player to prestige a certain amount of times to unlock a certain aspect of the skill. I think if anything, it should perhaps be cosmetic changes or maybe enhancements to existing things and skills, like for example in farming. Maybe as you prestige all the way up to prestige 15, the death chance goes down on your trees, for example, going down to 5% all the way at prestige 15, because you think prestige 15, that's going to be a lot of XP to get. So by that point, you better well have deserved a 5% death chance on your trees compared to whatever it is now. So that's just one example. I wouldn't put new content in per se. I would just put content in that enhances the existing skills, just so that we're not leaving anyone out.
Yeah, I think cosmetic is definitely the way to go. And just thinking off the top of my head here, it'd be kind of cool to maybe put a tick mark or something on a skill cape, like along the trim, or have a different colored trim. You know, once you prestige, you get that option to, you know, have some sort of adornment onto your skill cape or your 120 cape or you know, what have you.
And this is entirely true. And as I suggested in the original post, there would be no skill capes and there would be no bonus XP. But, I mean, this is all open, of course, for suggestion and discussion. I didn't intend this idea of Prestige Mode that I wrote to go in and go into the game exactly as it is, because I don't know what the inside of the skills look like in terms of metrics and whatnot. I don't know what they need. I don't know what they're lacking. So with that being said, I'm fully open to player discussion and hearing what Jagex thinks on this, because they know more about the skills than we do as players. And also with that, I did this mainly for not just myself, but everyone who is involved with a certain skill in the game. Because, I mean, I know maybe it's just something related to this podcast, but I know a good amount of people who listen to this podcast were with us when Prestige first was pulled, and, you know, that they thought maybe this should actually come out as it was. So it was, you know, a way to get the discussion going on potentially prestiging and to give something to all the supporters out there of the first Prestige who felt it was explained horribly by Jagex and feel it deserved another kick at the can. So with that being said, I am fully open to being flexible on what this Prestige mode should contain, as long as we're discussing it. So, and in that regard, I think that everyone who is listening to this right now should definitely go and give it a up support or an upvote, because like I said, this is a living and breathing suggestion that is not going to go into game exactly as Heidi outlined it, because that's not the way it works. That's not the way it should work for Rune Labs. So I think it's something that everyone can support and should support, for that matter. bit.ly/rsprestige2016. So, yeah, by all means, add something to it. What would you add to your favorite skill if you were to prestige it? Runecrafting.
I would think it's, I really like the idea of cosmetic. You know, like I said, whether it be some different trim color on your cape or whatever, but also maybe, you know, I don't know if this would happen due to Solomon's Door, but different sort of skilling animations. You know, say you've prestiged once when you runecraft, you know, you can it'll have different colors, you know, just little stuff. Because I can't really say that I would want any sort of buffs for doing it, for prestiging, because like you said, you don't want to make it seem like, you know, once you have 99 in the skill that you have to prestige, because in that case, then, you know, prestige 15 would be max, and it would just be ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I don't really know if I would add anything sort of gameplay-wise other than just some cool little cosmetics, maybe a pet or something. Nothing that really affects the actual game or true maxing. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's why I suggested the most I would do for farming would be death chances, playing with those. Mm-hmm. So, sleeping with a fan on, yes or no?
Is that like a euphemism for something, or is he just being literal?
I'm assuming Colton is being literal, yes.
Recently, yes, because it's you know, that time of the year where it's actually rained the past 4 days here, so it's very humid. You know, I have my window open just because I like the fresh air, but it's definitely gets pretty humid, and it gets a little warm at night, so yes, I do have my fan on.
Okay. I don't need it. All right. That was perhaps a very quick adjustment at the end, Colton. I'd be interested to hear what the reasoning behind that was.
Yeah. I'm curious now. You've piqued my interest.
Yeah, we have central air conditioning, so it's not really something that is required.
Yeah,
but if anyone wants to send questions in, like Colton and Wiley did, you can just email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Call or text the phone number, which is 571-57-BNB or 571-572-2632, or DM us at RSBNB on Twitter. Thank you both. Alrighty, so tech news. Facebook making news again this week.
In a literal sense of the term.
yeah, literal sense. Apparently Facebook has a newsroom. But we'll get to that in just a moment. So there is a portion of the Facebook website called the trending section. And in this trending section, it's supposed to show stories that are trending on Facebook. And for the longest time, it was believed that this was governed by an algorithm.
Yes, I can admit that I thought that's what it was.
Yeah, and I mean, you would think that a company, a high-tech company like Facebook, would run something like this based on an algorithm. But this week it has been revealed that the trending section on Facebook is actually staffed by a group of journalists who run a newsroom-like operation outside of Facebook. So that means that they have a list of sources that they can pull from, and then they ultimately decide based on what's going on Facebook, what's going on in real life, what are we going to put into the trending section here.
And see, the interesting thing is, and what's funny, you know, I didn't know. I thought this was all an algorithm literally until like an hour ago, like before we started recording, when you said that they have a newsroom. Like, I thought it was all algorithm. And knowing that there's people in a newsroom putting out these trending things, it's interesting because right before we started recording, I logged onto Facebook and the second trending thing on my page was RuneScape Chronicle, and as Jagex announces its new game to be released on Steam May 28th, and granted that could be just like cookies and stuff, but it's just interesting if these are people posting out the stuff that that Chronicle is making this cut, which I think is kind of funny. But
well,
anyway,
it was in the trending section, so that means that it did come from an RSS feed, and mm-hmm. the general thing was suggested by an algorithm and okayed by an employee at Facebook. Okay. So they're not going through every story. They're just saying what's okay and what isn't okay to do that. And in some ways, it's kind of teaching an algorithm what to do in that respect. But basically, the trending review guidelines released today both refer to organic and external topics that are surfaced via algorithm for inclusion into the trending module. Organic topics indicate a subject being mentioned on Facebook significantly more than its normal level of buzz, while external topics are detected by crawling RSS feeds of headlines from top news websites. They used external topics all the way until I stopped working there, one former curator who left Facebook in mid-2015. And he just described the person's statement earlier this week as, quite frankly, bullshit. So Basically, the idea behind this is that, yes, Facebook is trying to say that they are being, fair with this. But no, there are people who are having a significant weight on this. And this whole story actually first made it to light because it appeared as though websites and certain topics were getting more coverage than others. For example, conservative news websites like Breitbart and maybe news if it came from the Republican Party in the U.S. was being ignored in favor of something that is more in line of what Facebook believes, like Black Lives Matter, which is actually something that they have admitted to artificially promoting on the website. So, with that being said, an important question needs to be raised for everyone who relies on Facebook for their news, and that is, are you going to accept that this is the work of an algorithm that is blind to bias, or should we just go forward accepting that there will be some bias at the company? What do you think, Dave?
I mean, anytime a human is involved, I feel like it is pretty much inevitable to be completely neutral. You can try your hardest at an algorithm. You know, an algorithm can have its flaws, but a human is going to have some bias. So, I mean, it's kind of a catch-22. Ideally, you want this sort of platform to be as neutral as possible, being as large as it is throughout the entire world, not just the U.S. With regards to whatever it is, I think news as any should be, you know, as neutral as it can be and let other people form their opinions. I don't want to get on a huge tirade about propaganda and all that stuff, but it's always just seemed odd to me, you know, why there are, you know, different sort of, especially Facebook, because Facebook isn't, it's not any sort of political affiliation. It's a platform. Unless you state that you're clearly going to take a side, I don't think it's right for you to take a side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, if you're delivering it, deliver it in its purest and raw form and let people, if it's Fox News, okay, sure. They're known for being, you know, conservative, whatever. They're going to give it that way. But just, you know, if Microsoft is going to have a news app, you know, you're going to want the news. You're not going to want the liberal news. You're not going to want the conservative. You just want to know what happened.
Exactly.
And that's what I always want to do. And I typically don't watch the news because of that. I just want, like, the raw what happened. I don't want to read articles on other people's opinions. I just want to, like, okay, cool, this happened, do whatever, da da da. Just want the facts. I don't need somebody to go on a, you know, 8-page rant on why so and so shouldn't do this and do that. But definitely, since Facebook is a platform, and being as socially fragile as society has become, I think everything needs to be as neutral as possible, without, you know, an additive of them trying to sway the tables or skew the numbers
and,
or whatever.
I mean, we've discussed Twitter censorship before with them removing verified check marks from other conservative types. And it's no secret that these companies all support the Obama administration. And, you know, with that being said, it was actually made it to the U.S. Senate, believe it or not. A group of senators sent a letter to Facebook demanding an explanation about this. So That's how far this went up. And when you think about it, that is almost a warranted response in this case, because how many people use Facebook? It's a lot. And They rely on that being neutral, and it's supposed to be a platform for everyone. And if it's not, then people are going to go elsewhere, which is ultimately what is going to be the killer of Facebook one day. And it's not looking like that's going to be the case, because at 9:21 p.m. tonight, Mark Zuckerberg actually made a statement on this. I'll just paraphrase a bit of it here. Facebook stands for giving everyone a voice. We believe the world is better when people from different backgrounds and with different ideas all have the power to share their thoughts and experiences. That's what makes social media unique. We are one global community where anyone can share anything from a loving photo of a mother and her baby to intellectual analysis of political events. To serve our diverse community, we are committed to building a platform for all ideas. Trending Topics is designed to surface the most newsworthy and popular conversations on Facebook. We have rigorous guidelines that do not permit the prioritization of one viewpoint over another, or the suppression of political perspectives. This week, there was a report suggesting that Facebook contractors working on Trending Topics suppress stories with conservative viewpoints. We take this report very seriously and are conducting a full investigation to ensure our teams upheld the integrity of this product. We have no evidence that this report is true. If we find anything against our principles, you have my commitment that we will take additional steps to address it. In the coming weeks, I'll also be inviting leading conservatives and people from across the political spectrum to talk with me about this and share their points of view. I want to have a direct conversation about what Facebook stands for and how we can be sure our platform stays as open as possible. Wow. I did not expect that from him.
No. But, you know, it's I'm glad that he realizes that it needs to be neutral. I mean, for... You know, I don't want to step on toes here, but for Facebook being the biggest platform for all these keyboard activists posting pictures with all this stuff, and everybody's just, I mean, especially with the election coming up, it's just constant banter and opinions just flying left and right. For, you know, for Facebook to sort of just tune out what they don't want to hear, I mean, other than an unprofessional standpoint, that just seems kind of childish. Like, I'm just not going to show you what I don't want you to see. Like,
yep. And then you're heading into the whole realm of 1984.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's I'm glad that Zuckerberg, you know, kind of sees the problem and, you know, wants to sort of remedy it. But ultimately, you know, just to sum it up, yes, especially being Facebook, if you're not affiliated with a political party or if you're not affiliated with a certain stance, which you shouldn't be if you're a platform, yes, you have to. It is essential to stay as neutral as you can.
And so, I mean, based on his expression, unless he's straight up lying to everyone, this basically means that it was a group of rogue news curators that was doing that.
Right.
So we'll have to take it from there and see. And like I said, I think this year is going to be an interesting year for social media. I would not count it out that at some point throughout the year, you're going to see some candidates' point of view held back by a social media company for one reason or another, whether or not it's valid. So,
absolutely. I was actually shocked to see, I don't know if, I'm assuming probably not, and I don't know how many of our listeners use Snapchat, but I was very surprised to see Trump have a live feed story on Snapchat with the amount, especially on social media. I feel like Trump has really just, like, especially with my generation, it's just nothing but hate. And I feel like we have the most presence on social media, and it's all, you know, just everybody hates Trump. Everybody hates Trump. I was very, very, very surprised to see that Snapchat was, I don't want to say endorsing, but facilitating, you know, sort of a group montage of all kinds of, you know, Trump rallies and stuff with all the negative you know, press that he's got. So I was happy to see it because, you know, clearly they are staying open because, you know, they had everybody's stuff. It wasn't just, you know, Bernie Sanders, or it wasn't just Hillary Clinton. They had, you know, they had Ted Cruz, they had everybody, regardless of, you know, everyone's hate or bias or whatever. So, you know, throwing some kudos to Snapchat for really keeping it neutral, for sure. Especially with that sort of a, with that sort of a touchy subject, especially, like I said, with our generation on Facebook being so vocal about it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess I do have a bit of hope for Facebook then, after all. All right. Our next piece of tech news relates to Amazon and the potentiality of allowing individuals to access the Amazon marketplace with Amazon Video. So previously, Amazon's video was related to things like movies and whatnot. But now, Amazon Video Direct is going to enable any video curator to host their videos on Amazon. And of course, this will be competing with YouTube, both on a free and paid scheme. Amazon will pay partners 50% of the retail price for digital purchases, rentals, and subscription fees. And if they choose Prime Video distribution, creators will earn royalties of 15 cents per hour streamed in the U.S. and 6 cents in other countries, capped at $75,000 a year. At launch, Amazon Video Direct partners will include Condé Nast Entertainment, How Stuff Works, Samuel Goldwyn Films, The Guardian, Mashable, Mattel, Style Hall, Kin Community, Jash, Business Insider, Machinima, TYT Network, Baby Einstein, CJ Entertainment America, Zive TV, Synergetic Distribution, Kino Nation, Journeyman Pictures, and Pro Guitar Lessons.
I think this is great. You know, opening up platforms to developers is one of the best things a company can do as far as content and sales and traffic and anything goes. So good on Amazon. I think that's awesome. And that really opens up, honestly, and you know, I don't want to make promises or get up false hopes, but that really does open up some potential stuff for RSBMB update for sure with videos. And it's really nice to see a platform open up to the public. So.
Yeah, and plus when you consider it right now, YouTube is really the only platform out there where someone can take a video and put it up and, you know, share it. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of videos end up on the platform. Because if you think about it right now, there's tons and tons of videos on YouTube that are trending and, you know, going viral every day. So it all depends based on the kind of... audience it will draw, and I can see maybe some more professional studios and whatnot would choose Amazon over YouTube just because Amazon is associated with purchasing things out of the box.
Sure.
So gonna be interesting to see, and who knows, maybe it'll end up being like Spotify or something, because I know Spotify is running their own video production as well.
Are they?
Yeah, Spotify is going to be doing streaming video.
Oh, they will be. Okay, I didn't know if it was out yet or not, because I do subscribe to Spotify, so I was curious because I hadn't seen anything with that. But yeah, that'll be cool.
Yep. Alrighty. So, I mean, Amazon, we'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, Amazon basically changed the way we shop online. So I think that they are allowed to talk about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. And our final piece of tech news is... application released from Google called Gboard. It's a keyboard from iOS that brings search, GIFs, and emoji right to your fingertips. So basically the idea with this is that if you use GIFs when you're talking to people, you can do that. If you want to search, for example, to find a restaurant nearby you, you don't need to leave your messages app. You just click the search button in there. You can search it, pull up the pertinent information, and then send it to whoever you're talking to. So, yeah, I mean, okay, I can see this, and I have never had much luck with keyboards on iOS. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I haven't really played with it in fear that, you know, I would figure it would be clunky, but, you know, it's worth a shot. I'll try this out. I'll see if I get some time. I'll play around with it just to see what it's like, because, you know, the whole swiping thing is kind of a cool concept. You know, I've played around with friends' phones, and you know, being a avid resident of the internet, GIFs are quite they're definitely in my vocabulary and memes and whatnot. So it's it'll be, you know, I'll check it out. So
yeah, and I mean, I haven't had much luck from these keyboards before, because they just don't feel like they're a native solution. And for me, having a native keyboard is more important than the features that it brings. So that's why I feel that way about these. And with regards to swiping and whatnot, I think that swiping for me has produced more typos than the actual keyboards themselves. Yeah, you'll just want to ask Brad, or no, not Brad, you'll just have to ask Reed about that one. What kind of typo that led to once upon a time when I was first playing with swipe. But, yeah.
You know, I feel like with most software, I've been sort of conditioned to expect a lot of third, you know, and we can't expect this with Google, because, I mean, it's Google. They're obviously very polished in what they do. But with a lot of third-party software, especially keyboards, and replacing some sort of a native feature on any sort of platform or system, you know, I've grown to anticipate some degree of clunkiness, and I guess that's sort of what I'm afraid of. I haven't really done too much with my phone in regards to that, just because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and I can't warrant, you know, putting gifts and, you know, swiping. You know, it's not really worth making that sacrifice, and I'm also a little bit lazy, so
yeah,
I mean, it is what it is. But
and I mean, plus also for me, these keyboards only come out in English US for some reason. English Canada isn't released yet, and maybe it's because they also have to do a French version if they're going to release it to the Canadian App Store.
Right.
So, anyways, that's Gboard. And for what it's worth, Microsoft also put out two keyboards this year. The first one is Hub, which basically allows you to access OneDrive and all your Microsoft contacts via your keyboard if you want that. And they also put out WordFlow in the U.S., which is their Windows Phone-style keyboard. So there's two keyboards for iOS that you can try from reputable companies if you live in the U.S. And I say reputable because a keyboard on iOS does need your full permission in order to do things with the text-based entry, because they, of course, I mean, the keyboard is where you enter in all your data, so you want that to be secure.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
So, anyways, on to other things we go. So, the skill of the month update for May is our woodcutting skill of the month. Sorensen 57 is still in first place with 10.8 million XP gained. We've also had a lead change for number two, and that is that the RR Man is in second place with 3.6 million XP, followed by And That's Bad in third with 3.3, and then right behind is Parnassius with 3 million experience gained. So a close race for second there. Maintained to be seen if we can catch RR Man by the time the month is up. But the month isn't even half over yet, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yep, it's definitely a neck-and-neck race for second, third, and fourth, so it's actually pretty entertaining. So.
Yeah, and you got 49k XP.
I'm trying to hold up the end for everybody, so.
All right. Yeah, I mean, woodcutting is an interesting one to watch because it's all based on endurance.
Yeah, it's just amount of time you're able to invest.
Alrighty, so we do have one achievement of the week, and that is that Adiv got 99 invention on May 11th, so congratulations to you. Always nice to see the new skills popping up.
So, very good, very good.
Yeah.
Congrats.
I'll get 99 invention one day. It's taking a while. I'm not even level 60 yet. But
slowly but surely.
Yeah, slowly but surely. So congratulations, Adiv. I admire that.
Indeed.
Okay, so pick of the week time. So, we have things that we use to communicate with each other. We use Skype, we used to use Mumble. Some people use TeamSpeak, but there is another option out there that I would like to share with you guys all this week. And that is called Discord. So, Discord is something that we discovered a couple months ago, and we've been using it for RSBNB PC gaming, and it is basically a free alternative to Mumble that allows us to communicate with each other, and it looks a lot nicer too, and its ease of entry is excellent, because all you need to do to enter the RSBNB Discord server is head on over to the forums and click the Discord link, and you will be popped into the Discord server. So it's a really simple thing to get a hang of. So I don't think there's any reason why you wouldn't be able to use Discord, because even if you wanted to, you could use Discord in your web browser based on the modern APIs that are presented in Chrome and Safari and Firefox. So if you can't install the app, then you can definitely do it right there as well. So that's discordapp.com, and we use it for PC gaming and all general RSBNB gaming that happens throughout the week. And PC gaming happens every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern if you want to join us, and we do that in the Discord server. I've noticed a number of RSBNB members joining our Discord server, so that's always welcome to join in and see what we're chatting about and come visit us if we're using that to play other games or if we happen to be on RuneScape as well. So there will be a link to join our Discord server in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. But yeah, we really like it from an admin point of view as well, just because it's so simple compared to Mumble and we don't need to run anything on our server. And in general, the reliability is great. So, and good audio quality too.
Indeed.
So it's all supported across the board. And I mean, you just sign in and it's really easy to get onto it. So discordapp.com is what we use for that, and we might even be able to use it to do a live show on the week of our summer summit. So stay tuned for that and more information. So, yep. All righty. So what have you been up to, Dave, this week?
RS, the standard. I know it gets pretty boring on this segment, but yeah, just collecting my rocks each week for my statue, and then just chipping away at my trim requirements. I actually got some, I got a rank 3, I think it is, in RuneSpan last weekend with the May weekends. I'm not going to be doing too much in this May weekend because it's Dungeoneering and Raids, and I kind of avoid both of those like the plague. but next weekend is going to be, I believe, Bossing and Slayer. So I will be doing Slayer for sure to get my last few rewards. In unlocking Slayer Helmet and my final Reaper stuff, knock those off the list. And then the last weekend, it's going to be mini games, and I will be in Barbarian Assault. So I'll talk about that a little bit more once the time comes. But if anybody's interested in getting a team together, I need to max 3 more rolls and get a kill on hard mode, the Penance King. So if you guys want to hang out, I will be in the Discord channel, and we can all get it done and just have a good time, and you can get bonus XP and we can all just have a good time. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to. It's pretty boring, just doing my dailies and weeklies farming runs. So
yeah, and I'm sure you could also meet them in friends chat Bits Bytes as well.
Yep.
So yeah, it's good to hear. You have any timeline on anticipation when the trim date will arrive?
Gosh, you know, I would like before Christmas. But my two biggest time vampires are obviously going to be finishing out RuneSpan and, of course, what has previously been known as the Castle Wars requirement, but is now pretty much a Thela requirement, but it's still going to require, I think, upwards of 500 hours of playing the spotlighted minigame.
Yeah.
So that's quite a bit. Playing an hour a day, that's a year. So over a year, rather. So, yeah. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but
I don't think I could ever do that.
It's definitely going to be something I'm always going to work towards. So I'm sure we will get plenty of skills and plenty of updates that will be released before I can get that. But it's a slow and steady climb. So we'll see how it goes, and I will definitely be keeping everyone updated as long as I can. So.
All right, that sounds good. As for me this week, continuing to train invention at the point where each siphon does not get me a level, so racing for level 60 so I can head to level 12 disassembly and not rely on doing too many siphons, so that'll be coming quick. I think I'm level 57 at the moment right now, but aside from that, just doing herb runs, a couple of clue scrolls, and checking out the daily Meg cases, of course. Which, I mean, each case takes around 3 minutes to do, so it's really not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get a lamp, and you get the sock puppet, and the trench coat should be interesting, so I'm muddling through that. It's not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be, so.
Yeah. Which I think is good on their part, having very, like, just simple, basic, boom, done, because people don't want to invest all that time in it.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, you put so much time into doing things around RuneScape. Do you really want to be sent out on a quest, out to wherever, to just look for some random, you know, break-in that happened? Or do you, I mean, just want to do something else that's maybe related to your skills. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that I'm liking less about this year's Mega May event compared to the RuneScape Road Trip of past years, is that this one just seems it's almost too detective-like, and it's not using the skills or showcasing the game as well as the previous Mega May events did. But yeah, that's kind of a weekend look back at what Mega May is offering so far. But I believe that's it. I don't have anything else to mention RuneScape existence.
Nope, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okie dokie then. Well, thank you, Dave. Always a good show.
Thank you.
And we will see you guys all next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us. Remember, if you want to chat with us in-game, that's Friends Chat Bits Bytes, or you can follow us on Twitter @RSBNB. Take care, everyone.
See you guys.